Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on NABBAclub.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too, I must have this thing. Tonight, Lee Y. has traveled from Orlando, Florida, the Central Club. He's going to tell you all about that. I have seen him twice so far at the Atlanta Men's Workshop and up at the Friendship Group at in Buford. I'm really excited that he's come here, and I'm sure that it's going to be a night you'll remember a long, long time. So please welcome Lee to the podium.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lee. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm excited about being here. I don't know if you are, but I am. I'm standing upright, and I'm fully clothed. Man, that's a big deal from where I came from. Tomorrow's my sobriety date is November the 20th, 1984. So 28 years ago today, you know, it was my last stab at it, you know. And man, 28 years ago today, I didn't know that was going to be my last drink. Those three tall boy Budweisers and that 4 ounces of methadone. Because I was on methadone because I was I was cleaning my life up, you know. So, anyway, November 1984, I woke up that morning. It wasn't a big deal. It's the same as any other day. I dosed, had three tall boy Budweisers in the refrigerator, and I drank them all because that's what was in the refrigerator. And God, man, I walked by a TV there. I spent a lot of time in front of the TV, but I had everything anybody could ever want. I had a big stack of dirty magazines, had my comfortable chair, had that TV right there, that flipper, had a little tray there. I kept my gun on it and something to drink. And so I had everything a guy could want to have a comfortable and easy and peaceful life. I don't know why I was so unhappy. I felt empty. And I went, God, man, I feel empty. I grab a magazine. Have a drink. You know, it didn't do it. It didn't fill me up. Change the channel. Every so often I'd hit a religious channel, man. It's almost like there would be butter on that flipper. It'd slip out of your hand trying to switch that channel. I couldn't stand 5 seconds of that. Because, man, that scared me. Because those people talk, you know, made me look at myself. And anyway, it was November 1984. I got in my car and drove down to a warehouse facility that I had. And it was filled with a... because I've been involved in criminal activities. And I was in there checking some stuff out, and all of a sudden, boom, in Orange County. Special task force from the state of Florida, they all swooped in on me. Actually, one guy walked up. He looked kind of common. He reached down and pulled a pistol out of a holster he had in his ankle and had me get up against the wall and stuck that pistol in the back of my head. And then he said he was a police officer, Detective Lynn Cambry. And until he said that, I thought I was dead. I said, this is it. And you know what? I knew it was going to come anyway, and it really didn't make a damn. And I'd been, death would have been, from where I was sitting that day, death would have been peace for me, because my life had been hell for so long. And every day was another attempt to try to get out of madness, and my life was madness. And there was nothing but madness. You know, they talk about this is a spiritual program and that God can change your life. And I want you to know God can change your life. I was arrested with 14 loaded guns. I'd been involved in criminal activity and my sentencing and stuff. We determined that in three counties there was 105 armed felonies, 86 burglaries. And I robbed and stole and committed crime for the last 3.5 years. Because I got out of jail 3.5 years before that last time. And I got out, I took a drink, and I was back at it again, running full wide open. And I was armed and dangerous, and I was a savage. And And that's not what God wanted me for me in my life. And God took me. And it happened that fast. 2 weeks, they'd had that stake out for 2 weeks. That man sat there and waited for me. And they thought that was the best place in the world they might find me. And I usually made it by there more often than that. But my first ex-wife, she had been in a treatment center, and she had a prayer on a piece of notebook paper. And prior, the day they started that stakeout, I had seen that prayer, and I read that prayer. And I looked at that prayer, and I'd read that prayer every day for 2 weeks. And I guess God heard that prayer, you know. And it was some weeks later that I found that prayer in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. That God, I offer myself to thee. And man, I didn't know what that meant. All I knew is I said, God, something's going to change me. It's going to have to be. Because I am done. I hate me. I hate my life. And I can't stop my life. My life had me. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. All I knew was that I had no friends. Man, I'd walk the streets at night. I'd have a pocket full of dope. All I could drink. I had a gun with me everywhere I went. I had nobody. I couldn't pick up the phone and call any human being because there was nobody in my life. I was alone, and I'd been that way a long time. And I'd pace the streets, and I'd walk the streets at night, and I would prowl. Basically, all I would do was just, I had nowhere to go and nothing to do, and I'd prowl the streets, and I'd find some crime to get into because that's all I knew. And I'd get into some crime, and I'd get some money. And I stayed ahead. Those last three and a half years, I stayed ahead of the game. I didn't run out of money because I stayed very busy. I told you my sobriety date, November 20, 1984. I live in Florida. I was here anyway visiting my sweetheart, Joette, for Thanksgiving. And so we're going to have a wonderful Thanksgiving this week. And probably my best friend in the world, Dick, got up and read tonight. And there's nothing Dick doesn't know about me. I don't have any secrets. And man, my life was secrets when I got here. You better believe it was secrets. Nobody got inside of what was happening inside of my life. And nobody knew who I was. I was just a ghost walking around. And so anyway, I don't know how you guys drink, but here's how I drink. When I drink alcohol, I cannot control the amount of alcohol I drink. Something happens to me when I put alcohol into my body. I develop an unquenchable thirst for alcohol. Once I start drinking, I have little or no control over the amount of alcohol I drink. And for a long, long, long time, I didn't care how much alcohol I drank. I wanted to drink. I wanted to get drunk. I wanted to get drunk, 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 drunk. And man, I did. I got as drunk as I could get, and I loved it. And I said, man, this is great. And but the day came that I did not want to wreck my car or misplace my car or lose my car or have to come up with another car. I was never very employable, but occasionally I'd have a job. I said, man, I want to try to keep this job. I don't want to hurt whoever I've got in my life. I want them to stay. I don't want them to leave me. I want them to stay with me. And I'd say, I'm not going to get drunk, 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 drunk tonight. I'm just going to get half drunk. And I couldn't get half drunk. I got all drunk. And I learned this all by myself. I knew this about me, and nobody told me this. Once I put alcohol in my body in any form at all, I have little or no control of the amount I drink. All bets are off once I take a drink. And that's a bad problem. When you love to drink the way I love to drink, and you can't control the amount you drink once you start, it's a bad problem. But I've got another problem. And it's a lot bigger than that. Our book says it's our main problem. I've got a mental problem. I've got a problem with my mind. Because when I'd really had enough, when I was done, when I put the plug in the jug, when I was through, and I quit forever, and I mean it, and I know what the problem is, and everybody's going to be happy now. All of a sudden, I change my mind. And having a drink of alcohol seems like the best idea I've had in a long time, you know. And I go out and have a drink of alcohol. I'm in all the trouble I was maybe just 2 weeks ago. He got so bad for me that I ended up here. I ended up in a room called Alcoholics Anonymous. Since being here, I've discovered it doesn't get a lot worse than that. I heard a guy say once on the way to the cemetery, I stopped at an AA meeting. I said, that's me. That's what I did. I'm happy to announce that as a result of coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, getting a copy of this book, asking a man to help me and letting that man into my life, I'm happy to announce I have not changed my mind about a drink of alcohol in over 28 years. Tomorrow. Actually, I had my last drink this morning, 28 years ago. So it's been over 28 years since I had a drink of alcohol. So that's a miracle. That's a miracle. And I had extenuated circumstances. So I didn't just have alcoholism. I had all the other stuff too. I had crazy. I had just hit the ground running crazy. They didn't raise me to be that way. So I've got a problem with my body. I've got a problem with my mind. I've got a defect of the mind that will not allow me to leave it alone. And I got a defect of the body. Once I drink, all bets are off. I don't have to drink till after I've had a drink. I've learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I had to drink. I'd take that first drink. And after coming here, reading the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I discovered I have a defect of the will. And that's what I'm here to treat. Because I think and act only out of self-interest. That's my life. Give me me. It's mine. Oh, you think it's yours, but it's mine. And you can be first after me. And I'm here to treat that tonight because I still have alcoholism. I have a mind of an alcoholic. And it's a selfish... The book says the root of our problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. And that's my life. Extreme example. I'd go to any length to get what I had to have, thought I had to have. And I proved it by going to penitentiary more than once. Our book says that any life based on self-will, any life based on getting, having to get what I want to be happy, is doomed to fail. It can hardly be a success. And our book says that the first requirement that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. That I'm a victim of the delusion. I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I get what I want. If I manage well. So I live my whole life trying to get what I want. And there's two problems with living life like that. You don't always get what you want. And that's hell. And then you get what you want, and it's not enough. It doesn't go far enough. It doesn't fill that hole. What's wrong with that? You know, it sure looks like it's going to fill that hole. It doesn't fill the hole. It's easy to see that not getting what we want, not getting our will, can't satisfy us. And it makes my life miserable because all my resentments come as a result of not getting my will in the past. All the anger and depression that I'm experiencing today comes as a result of not getting my will in the present. And all the fear that I have in my life is my concern I'm not going to get my will in the future. So, man, I came in here with a whole lot of that. And so I knew that was a problem. But then there's the other side of that. I get what I want. And when I get what I want, it's not enough. I filled my life with emptiness. And I became empty. I heard a story about a little guy that got everything he wanted. And I watched it on TV with my daughter. It's the African dung beetle. And all he wants is a big pile of dung. And he finds one. And he'll crawl up on top of that big pile of dung, stand on his front legs, and with his back legs, he finds a little ball of it and starts rolling it and pushing it. And as he's pushing that little ball, it gets bigger. And he'll push it, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. When it gets so big that he cannot move it any longer, he crawls to the top of it, bores a little hole down into the middle of it, crawls down inside of that thing, and lives there. I said, my God, that looks just like an alcoholic. My whole life is crap. man, you can put me in the best situation in the world. And I'd come up with that conclusion in a short time. Give me everything. Give me everything there is. And in a short time, I'll say, my whole life is crap. Now, that's real alcoholism. So, I've got a problem. It involves alcohol. But alcohol is not the problem. So, what's the problem? Well, where does it hurt? And that's why we have 12 steps of a spiritual program, a spiritual way to live. I've got a program that can reach down into that place. Man, I spent my whole life not going to that place. I'd do anything not to feel that place. Because that's hell, and there's no answer. There's no relief. There's no answer. So anyway, and then I found 12 steps. 12 steps. My God, man. 12 steps. Spiritual program. God can use the 12 steps to reach down into that place and bring wholeness and heal that place and make us okay. That's my experience. And I said we had to have God's help. Because that's what gets that power can get down into that place. I knew nothing about anything like that. I mean, I was clueless. I knew nothing about spiritual, God, anything like that, man. My little daughter, I got a 14-year-old daughter. When she was little, we'd play a game called Opposites. And I'd say, in. She'd say, out. And I'd say, over. Under. And she'd say, off. On. Now, she knew the answers. And I'd say, self-centered. She'd say, God-centered. Because that is the opposite of self-centered and self-centered life, an alcoholic mind. I didn't know anything about that, you know. So I didn't know the problem, and you can't know the solution until you know the problem. First we accept the problem. Then we can have the solution. So I spent all my life looking for the problem, I guess. 15 years old, I'd ran away from home. And I ended up living with my grandparents. And my parents weren't as bad as I thought they were. I was living with my grandparents. And a perfect situation. Two people completely devoted to me. I'd never had that before. They were a stable home. Two people completely devoted to me. So now there's three of us completely devoted to me. You know? And that wasn't enough. It wasn't enough. But I found out what I thought would be enough. And she drove up in a car across the street where she lived one day, and she was 3 years older than me, and she was a cheerleader. And she got out of that car, and when I saw that cheerleading outfit and those pom-poms, I said, this could do it for me. And I was instantly in love. And I would peek through the window at my grandma and watch until I would see her. God, man, this is it. This is it. I love her. I love her. But I was standing at school one day, and she walked in the room where I was at. Now, I didn't know this was going to happen. But she walked in the room, and I couldn't even turn my head. I was frozen. I could, corner of my eye, I could just kind of see her arm. I think I could smell her. I had to run out the door. I could not breathe. Sweat. My mind was racing. I couldn't think. God, man, I'm about to die. Run out the door. So I said, she'll be at the dance. That's the ball game. I'll see her at the dance. I'm ready now. I prepared myself. It's going to be different. There she was at the dance. I saw her. I said, after this song, I'll ask her to dance. That song in. Well, maybe after the next one. That song in. Maybe after the next one. I didn't know that was self-centeredness. I didn't know what it was. God, man, I'm freaking out. I said, I can't live like this. So she brought a lot of that up to me. I saw that in her. But she brought that up. I was able to see it, that situation. Anyway, I'd like to say that, you know, I'm convinced today I'd be like that today. Listen, that was a long time ago. I'd be just like that right now. But one day I found the solution. a magical, wonderful thing happened when a buddy of mine came over to my grandparents' home where they were gone with two bottles of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. Listen to this. Our book says that we, in our third step prayer, says we are in a bondage of self. Relieve me of this bondage of self. We ask our higher powers to do that. Third step. That book says that's the beginning of the program. Free me from the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. I've been in a bondage of self. 15 years bondage of self. Listen to this. Two bottles of Boone Farm. I drank one bottle, he drank the other one. 15 years bondage of self. 10 minutes later, I'm up on the roof of my grandparents' house screaming out my declaration of love, you know, for this girl. All that fear is gone. I felt like I was 10 foot tall, bulletproof, faster than a speeding bullet, able to leap tall buildings, smoke rolling out of my ears, lightning out of my rear, you know. God, man, I scream, I love you, freedom, omnipotence, for me, that's what it felt like to me. I love you. She came outside. Her parents came outside. Some of the other neighbors came outside. I didn't care. I just said, you make the stars shine. You make the sun rise. She's buried her face in her hands like this. I knew instantly that she wanted me. Man, alcohol was working. I remember I was up there, God, man. I said, I'm going to drink this stuff for the rest of my life. And I almost did. I almost did it, except for you. You're the only thing. I knew I was going to drink. Man, I knew I was going to drink. I said, this is it. The magic. I couldn't wait. It was a week later. My buddies and I were on our way to school. We pool our lunch money. You get a case of Boone's Farm for $7.20. We drink that in the morning. Morning drinker a week later. 3 weeks after my first drink, I can think back today, I'm in a dairy tree with all my buddies, one of my mom's Pontiacs. Sit about eight of us. 3 quarts of Budweiser. I'm in the back seat of that car all by myself. All alone. They're all out talking to people at the dairy tree, doing what you're supposed to do. I'm all alone in the backseat of that car with 3 quarts of Budweiser. I got it all. Completely content. A lone drinker 3 weeks later. I had no explanation for that. I don't know where that comes from. But for me, adding alcohol to my body when I was 15 is just like taking a match and throwing it in a bucket of gasoline. Whoosh! Not like for us. Boys like that for me. My pilot was lit. All I needed was the fuel. Whatever that thing was present inside of me at a very young age. Not like that for all of us. Many of us have years of social drinking. And like the book says on the bottom of page 13, top of page 14, he has lost control. At some point, you lose control over all your drinking once you start. You know, it comes about different than it was for me. A guy like that can come to AA and maybe have your career back. You've already got one. Be reunited with your family, perhaps. Or get to see your kids again. Stuff like that. Alcoholism never cost me anything. Because of alcoholism, I never got anything. I didn't get started in life. I loved to drink. I drank a lot. I thought it was a compliment. People would come up to me and say, me and they'd say, boy, you sure do drink a lot. I'd say, oh, thank you. Alcohol created for me an unreal world, and I drank to live in it, and it was fantastic. It almost did it. It almost did it. It almost did it for me. When I was, I don't know where I got this idea. We decided we'd steal. I was about 16. We wanted some money. We're stealing. I never stole anything in my life. My uncle was chief of police in the town that I lived in, my grandmother's brother. And that was my role model. I said, let's steal. My buddy and I, we stole something. And God, man, it kind of bothered me. It felt kind of, ooh, tinge of conscience. That didn't last very long. Very short time. I wanted to just steal something from everybody. And God, I tried to. If it's so big we couldn't move it, I'd lay down next to it and claim it. And we were rampant in the community. My buddies and I, man, we just, whoo, tornado. We were rampant in the community that we lived in. Listen to this. I'm 16 years old. I'm as big as I am right now. Nothing but muscle and strong. And I could run almost full speed with a washing machine. You know? Nobody can do anything with me. You know, they can't do anything with me, man. I am done. I'm 16. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm going to get it done. And I, you know, that was it. 17 years old, you know. What do you do? 16 years old, juvenile court. My grandfather, oh my God. 17 years old, civil court, assault. My grandfather said, yeah, this is embarrassing. What's the neighbors going to think? When I was 18 years old, I would stumble down that road where my grandparents lived. My grandfather would see me run inside the house, screaming to my grandmother, oh my God, he's coming back! And by the time I would hit the door, my grandmother was clutching her purse to her like this, and my grandfather would stand with his arms around the portable television set. And that's the last place I would go. I went there when it was an emergency. I went there when I was sick, hungry, tired, dirty, and nowhere else to go. And I went there because I'd been to the party. I'm going to the party. And the party had smoked my butt again. Again. And I'd get better and I'd go back to the party. God, man. And I'd come back sick, man. I was real sick. Hadn't eaten, dirty. My grandmother would feed me, give me something to eat. We'd sit on the couch. She'd throw her arms around me and start crying and begging me. He put a dime in my hand and said, please call us. We just want to know if you're alive or dead. Please call us. Your grandfather will come get you. And my grandfather got up in the middle of the night. He worked hard. He's a carpenter. He'd get in the middle of the night and come get me if I'd call. They wanted peace. We drive them crazy. We drive them crazy. The people that love us. I like that sign. Thank you, Alex. We drive our kids crazy. But we don't have to anymore. We can be here. And we can be good parents. Good sons and good brothers and sisters and all that stuff. Anyway, I went to prison for the first time when I was 19. Grown man's penitentiary. I don't have much to say about that. You that have been, know. You that hadn't, you don't want to know. And I knew if I ever got out of that place, I'd be a different guy. You heard of Scared Straight? I thought of that a long time before those other guys. I think I'm the first one thought of that. Scared Straight. God, I was scared straight. Immediately. And I got out. The day I got out, I knew I was going to have a different life. I actually extended my stay. I couldn't be good there either. But I got out. I knew I'd have a different life. I got six uncles. I can get a job. I got a car. Man, they gave me a car. We hadn't loved him enough. Let's give him a car. And, God, man, second day out, I hooked up with a pint bottle of Jose Cuervo. 2 weeks later, I'm with the same guys doing the same old things. And 2 weeks after I got out of that mess, I was right back in there again. Take the next 12 years of my life, stick them in the garbage. Every time I got out of jail, I thought I was free. Every time I got out, I said, I'm never going back. I just want to be a regular guy. I just want to have a job, have a car. This is what I wanted in life. I wanted to have a job. I wanted to have a car. I wanted some clothes. I wanted to live someplace. That's my goals. It'd be great to have an education. If I could just, you know, get an education. Have a girlfriend. That'd be nice. Man, I see some guys. Say, man, this guy's a big loser in high school. He's got a nice car and a job and a girlfriend. I can do that. Man, I'd have a drink. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do any of it. It was done. So anyway, the madness was always there for me. I'd be at my grandparents' house and, yeah. First day be okay, second day is okay, third day I'm pacing before, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, walk outside, walk around the house 10 times, come back in, my grandmother would attack me. She'd say, Lee, can I fix you a sandwich? I say, "Ah, get off my back. You're driving me crazy." And I'd leave. I'd boom out of there walking. And alcohol. I wasn't even going to drink. And I'd find alcohol. Peace, ease, and comfort. One more time. So anyway, just skip ahead in this thing. That was it. That's my life. You know, humiliation to people that love me. And a life of degradation. Young guy, all through my 20s. So I moved all, I don't know. You know, I tried everything. I tried a lot of stuff. And, you know, we're clueless about alcoholism. Moving somewhere, that's not going to do it. I moved all over the United States. You know, happiness is Arkansas in the rearview mirror. Boom. They said, get married. I said, that's it. Get married, you settle down, man. Hey, listen to this. Believe it or not, this is crazy. There are women who are looking for guys that don't have jobs or cars and drink a lot of alcohol. I found me one of them. She broke 11 glasses right off of my face the first 18 months we were married. She'd never heard of Al-Anon. She was more like an alligator. We off and on, in and out. She'd leave. We never there at the same time. And one time I came back, and it was her turn to be there. I surprised her. I was sick. I said, "Honey, I know I haven't been the best husband, but I want you to know one thing. I'll never abandon you again." She packed all her stuff and ran for her life. I thought I was bringing her hope. November 1984, I was arrested and placed in the Seminole County Jail in Central Florida. It was there that I was separated from alcohol. The last 3 years of my drinking was just daily madness, daily madness, daily madness, 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 madness. I woke up in the mornings with two thoughts. Get the money, get loaded, get loaded. 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 I lived every second of my life for the last 3.5 years with two thoughts. Get the money, get loaded. Get the money, get loaded. Get the money, get loaded. November 1984, I'm arrested, placed in Seminole County Jail. Last 3 years, I don't know how many times emergency vehicles came out. Have a hazy memory of flashing blue lights or red lights. Somebody picking me up off the ground, my head busted open, blood everywhere, you know. Somebody trying to help me. And I wasn't. You couldn't help me. Human power could not help me. So anyway, I'm standing in the jail. I'm sick. God, you know, I'm sick. 21 days of sick. Coming off, you know. But I'm standing out of nowhere. I hear AA meeting. My thought was, well, why would they have one of those here? You know, it's unnecessary. No liquor stores in here. A man came to a jail. That's how I got here tonight. A man came to a jail. Jerry had never been in jail. Jerry was, you know, alcoholic. He's a pretty good alcoholic. Never been arrested. Never had any trouble. Jerry wanted to bring a meeting to men or women that could not get him, go and get a meeting for themselves. I thought he was there. I don't know why he was there. Like, what's he getting out of this? Jerry had embraced that thing that Bill Wilson said. We don't help other alcoholics because they're alcoholics. We help other alcoholics because we're alcoholics. Jerry was there to save his life. And he just came every week. God, man, every week. I'd go because they write your name down when you go. And when I go before that judge, God, man, I want to have something, you know, going there. Look at this now, Judge. I've been to those AA meetings. That's what I thought of you. That's as much as I could imagine, dream, or hope that any of you people could do for me. You were worth me going to a meeting and getting my name on a piece of paper. And what happened to me is November 1984, I stumbled into a meeting called room called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got a whole brand new life. More than I could ever hope, imagine, or dream. I couldn't dream that I could have a life, that I could have something. I didn't know it. God, man, I'm in jail and I got problems. This food is awful. They feed you 3 times a day, a lot better than I'd ever done on my own. I had a terrible, terrible lawyer, free lawyer. They give you a lawyer. First time I met him, he came in a little holding cell. His pants were split from here all the way back around to here. He said, that happened when he got off the bus. I said, this guy's in worse shape than I am. And I had madness. I had madness, madness, madness. They put me in lockdown 7 times, once for 14 days, because I couldn't, because of the madness. Because I had the madness. And I'd just be sitting there. And I could read mine. I knew the future. You know? And it was chaos. Just chaos. Madness. And wasn't no Budweiser in there. But nothing. God, it wasn't nothing. I was going crazy. And Jerry brought us copies of this book. And I had this book. And when I would sit up straight in the middle of the night and scream, I could read this book. And I read the book. You know, you got nothing else, not a lot going on. Pick up the book and read 2 paragraphs about a jaywalker. And go, this looks familiar. You wonder why Bill Wilson wrote that comical stuff in there like that. Like a cartoon. Imagine a jaywalker. And I saw me. And I'm like, that's where I'm a jaywalker. I wish that's all I'd done. God. Anyway, when I was 27 years old, I was 30 years old when I was in Seminole County Jail. When I was 27, I'd gotten out of penitentiary. My mother allowed me to live there. This book says our dark past is the greatest possession we have. It's the key to life and happiness for others. So anyway, 27 years old, my mother, I was living there. My sister has severe mental problems. And she would become violent when this would happen. And I was late. And what you do is you go and you restrain her. You calm her down. You have to restrain her. My mother yelling for me, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, please come help, please come help. Your sister's being violent. I got out of bed. I had one thought. I knew exactly what I was going to do. I wasn't confused. I'm going to go in there and help my mother restrain my sister. Being violent. I rolled up out of that bed and I, fully clothed, walked in the kitchen. I saw something that nobody ever did around a guy like me. And struggling with my sister, my mother dropped her purse into a chair. And when I saw that purse, that drink thing hit me. Of course, I took $20 out of her purse and her car keys. I drove off. I got drunk. I came back at midnight. I walked through the front doors. Whole rooms, walls, couch, everything's covered with blood. Well, my sister got a pistol and shot my mother in the face. And I was there 10 minutes. My grandfather and my uncle came in. They said they were hopeful that my mother was going to live. Listen to this. It's 2 days before they could take me to the hospital because I kept drinking. That thing had been turned off. And, you know, I don't get to turn it off. So I'm in Seminole County Jail 3 years later, and I sit up straight in the middle of the night and scream. And I read in this book where it says, if when you honestly want to, you find that you cannot quit entirely, or when drinking, you have little control over the amount of alcohol that you drink, you're probably an alcoholic. I want you to know that was good news. I mean, man, that was good news. I got that. I said, this is me. This is me. That's me. That's what I do. That meant that I wasn't the sorriest son that ever walked the face of this earth. That meant that I wasn't the lowest dog that ever lived. That meant that I was an alcoholic. I was not somebody that would walk out on his mother or leave her to be harmed. I was a young man caught in the grip of an obsession greater than any human power could deliver me from. And when I saw Jerry that brought the meetings in, I ran up to Jerry and said, just please tell me what to do. 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 Jerry said, Lee, I can't tell you what to do. or show you what I did, pointed me back to this book. He said, we had a program. We have a program. We have a way out. We have a way out of the madness. So anyway, that's when I started trying to get serious with Alcoholics Anonymous. Man, I was serious. I said, I've lived this way for 15 years, and if I do this, I don't have to live that way anymore? Thank you. Thank you. Where's this been? And so, God came into my life. I asked God into my life. And God came into my life. And God came into my life with, just like it says. You know, the book says, you know, if your problem is alcohol, quit. Hey, no more problem. If you're like us, then quit and you do it again. 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 Here in Alcoholics Anonymous, we call that being powerless. That means you're going to have to find a power greater than yourself. I grasp that. Okay, power greater than me. Power greater than me. My problem is not alcohol. And this spiritual process is going to answer my needs. You mean when the garbage of my life is eliminated or removed? As it's being removed, God is going to fill my life up with good stuff? You mean God's been forever been standing there with His great life wanting me to have it? But there's no room in your life for good life, Lee. I wish there was. Your life is full of you. I suffered from spiritual constipation. Too much Lee unpassed. So I took a 12-step spiritual enema. What I did was I got down to business with 12 steps. Jerry says, it's called house cleaning. And as you are removed out of your life, God will come in. And when God comes in, good things happen. So good things happen for me. My fall partner went to Orange County where he was arraigned on 4 life felonies in 175 years. It's always interesting to go into one of these where they're arraigning everybody on their charges and the whole room kind of gasped after you read the charges. Man! And so they brought me down there a week later. And I'd ask God to help me. I said, God, take my life. It means my life is nothing. If you can do something with it, you do. So I started doing 12 steps to Alcoholics Anonymous incarcerated. Went down to get my charges, get my 4 life felonies in 175 years. I got arrested twice in 84 for armed with my stolen handguns. At both times I had stolen handguns. I had a whole closet full of them. You know? And So I got it right down to get my charges, and they said, they fingerprinted me. The guy said, I can't get your fingers to make a fingerprint. I said, what are you talking about? He goes, your fingers don't secrete an oil necessary for a good impression. I said, what? He goes, yeah. I said, well, they didn't have any trouble in those other counties. Then they said, no eyewitness. No eyewitness. I'm standing right next to this other person. And there's no eyewitness? I said, man, this program works. So they gave me, yeah, I got all the time they could give me. You got another guy getting 2 mandatory maximum sentences. Stacked 2 and ran 2 concurrent life sentences. And I'm standing right there next to him. And I get 5, you know, they jumped outside the guidelines on me, said I was an extreme case. And they gave me 4.5 years. I said, man, this program works. And I went in the joint, maximum, you know, my record, I'm going to stop and say it. I've stayed too drunk too long. But it was for somebody. It was for somebody. There's somebody here that needed that. I know there is. I was speaking in Youngstown 2 nights ago, Ohio. Told my story. I got sober in it. And a little girl came up to me afterwards. She said, I got 5 months and 5 days sobriety. And I've got that 5 months and 5 days because I just got out of jail. I was in jail for 5 months. And everything you said was my life. So thank you. I knew I was here for somebody. I did my time. I got out, and I stayed active in Alcoholics Anonymous the whole time I was incarcerated. I got out, and you know, of course, I needed a job. Yeah, you get a job. I'm an ex-felon. You know, no jobs for ex-felons. And I was struggling. I, you know, kind of pretend I had a job, you know, staying in a halfway house. I was acting like I had a job. I'm tired and that, you know, I'd worked hard. I was so ashamed. And I'd had, you know, I had 11 jobs the first 18 months I was out. Every job I had had one thing wrong with it. They wanted me to work. Work fascinated me. I could watch it for hours. I'd always heard hard work wouldn't kill you. My thinking was, why take a chance? I knew all about work. You teach you how to work in a penitentiary. First day you get there, they give you a job you don't want that you can't quit. They were serious about that work thing. Got a guy with a gun standing there. Make sure you do it. Half a day of those guys is 12 hours. So break time is when that guy with that gun kind of turns around. So I knew all about that. I had a weak work ethic. So I had a bunch of jobs real quick. They said, you got to get a job. You never stay sober without a job. And so I said, okay. And a guy brought me a business card, handed it to me, and said, I always liked to talk to the women after I was released. I talked to men for 2 years. I knew everything a man had to say. I want to talk to a woman. What's a woman got to say? And so I was in there talking to a woman, old timer on the other side of the room. Get a job! Very humiliating. Guy came over to me, handed me a business card. Call this guy tomorrow. Maybe you get this job. So anyway, I went to call a guy the next day. I said, come down here tomorrow. Bring your resume. Click. All I heard was resume. What am I going to put on some kind of resume? State prison. Forget it. So I went to my meeting that night. By that time, people in AA, they get very, real interested in you and stuff, you know, your business. And they all knew that guy gave me a card and trying to help me get that job. And the little girl I was talking to was at the door, and an old-timer was at the door. They were waiting for me. My sponsor, I had a little sponsor. He was there waiting. A couple other people kind of like me. There's 40 people in the room. Lee, did you get the job? What did they do when you went down there? Hey, get that job. We were praying for you to get the job. And I said, I'm not going down to that place. They wanted a resume. And they said, oh, Lee, that's just the truth. Go down there. They just want you to tell the truth. Go down there and tell them the truth. I said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard of in my life. I'm not going to tell them the truth about me, because the truth about me is horrible. I mean, everything about me is bad. Everything about me is awful. There's nothing good about me. The only thing good about me is I'm in AA, and I can't even tell them that. Forget it. And she goes, you know how you are. You didn't say, oh, I feel so bad for him. They go, that's unwillingness. What, is that what that is? Yeah, that's what it is. Unwillingness. He's unwilling. Lee's unwilling. But about 5 seconds, it went all the way around the room. 40 people looking at you. That's the guy that's unwilling. And he's dishonest because he won't tell the truth. God, man. Okay, I'll do it. Next day, I was praying. God, you got to go with me. We're not going to be down there very long. Walked in that guy's office. He said, sit down. Where's your resume? I said, I don't have a resume. He goes, no big deal. Do you have any experience in sales? And the moment he said that, it's like a light went off in my mind. I said, well, yeah. I've sold microwaves and stairs and TVs and guns and boats and cars and a lot of jewelry and anything off somebody's porch. You know, he goes, wow, you got a lot of experience. Can you start tomorrow? I said, yeah, man. I sold that guy's product like popcorn. You didn't have to sneak down the alley with it or keep it covered up with a blanket or hide it in the trunk of your car. You just walk up to anybody. And I don't think God minds it at all that we have something. I don't think God minds it at all that we do pretty good here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I always felt like I didn't deserve it. I'd get something good, I'd say, I don't deserve that. God, you got bad judgment. That's what I'm saying. You deserve it. You deserve it. You got something good in your life, say thank you. And if you feel like I deserve it, I deserve it. Because God, you got good judgment. Listen to this. I was only out 6 months after all those years of madness, loser, no kind of life, degradation, craziness. I was only out 6 months. I'd reached all my dreams had come true. I had a job. I had a car. I had some clothes. I lived somewhere. I mean, I'm a regular guy. I'm a regular guy. I'm a guy. My life works. What else can I do? God, man, I was down in our group office one day, and they said, "You want to be on the service committee?" I said, "Yeah, I'll be on the service committee." We're on the service committee. About a year after I was on the service committee, I said, "What we do here is real important. I'm important. What we do is valuable. I have value. I have value. I'm worth something." I felt so good about myself. I said, "I bet I could go back to school. I'm worth. I feel good. I got some confidence. I'll go back to school." I went back to school. I got an education out of the deal. I made straight A's all the way through Seminole Community College. Straight A's. I made F's. I was too ashamed to go back, you know, when I was a kid. Man, I went made straight A's all the way through college. And one day I was heard a little girl in a meeting. She said, "I got a great life. I got a most wonderful life because I love my job. My job, it's my purpose for being here. God has given me my purpose. I do my job. I get up every day and I love it. I love it. I love to go and do my job. And I'm a nurse and I help people and I love it. And sometimes I wake up at 4:00 in the morning. I'm so excited about getting up and going to work. I can't go back to sleep. I just lay there thinking about going to work, going to work, going to work." I said, "God, I don't feel that way at all. What's wrong with me?" I said, "God, is there something like that for me?" That's a wild prayer. Isn't that kind of wild? Maybe there's something like that that I'd like. I could have something that I like to do. I said that prayer. Listen to this. I love what I do today. It happened. It happened. And let me tell you this. When you love what you do, just like waking up and being on vacation every day when you love what you do. Sometimes I wake up at 4:00 in the morning and I'm so excited to get up and go to work. I just lay there. I can't go back to sleep. I said, "Thank you, God. I got a million, miracle after miracle after miracle I got to share with you. I got a beautiful 14-year-old daughter." What's that? What? I can have something like that? After my sobriety, the greatest blessing in my life today is my little 14-year-old daughter, Hannah. Never seen her daddy drunk. Never had to go to a correctional facility to visit her father. Never saw her father crawl around the floor in his own filth. And, so, you know, how good is that? She's got 4 years in Alateen. So anyway, let me close with a quick story. And this is a true story. Saw it on TV. 1989, father walked us in Armenia. Country, Armenia, it's a place. Father walked his son to school one morning. Got him steps to school, left him there at school. He walked several blocks where he was working. And that day in Armenia, there was an earthquake. And he, amazingly, a miracle, he dragged himself out of the rubble of the building that he was in. He started running those blocks where that school had been. Past emergency vehicles, fires, people screaming. Got to the steps of school, it's a pile of stone. And he ran to the top of the pile and started throwing rocks and throwing bricks and screaming out his son's name. Armand, 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 Armand. And people would come to him, and they'd say, "You're cut. Let us bandage you. You're bleeding. We want to help you." And he'd say, "Help me find my son. Help me find my son." And they'd say, "We can't help him. He's out of his mind." And they'd go help somebody else. 36 hours later, he was still standing there throwing rocks and throwing bricks and screaming out his son's name. After 36 hours, he heard something. And he said, "Armand, is it you?" And he heard, "Yes, Father, it's me." He said, "Son, are you all right?" He said, "Yes, Father, I'm all right. There are 13 of us in here. I told them that if my father is alive, he will not rest until he saves me. And after he helps me, he'll help you too. You new people, I got real good news." Here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have a father. In the fifth chapter of this book, Bill Wilson wrote, "He is the father, we are his children." In the closing of Dr. Bob's story, Dr. Bob wrote, "Your heavenly father will never let you down." Here in the programs of Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon and Alateen, we have a heavenly spiritual father who will not rest until he saves you. And he will not rest until he reaches you. And after he helps you, he's going to use you to help somebody else. I love you guys. Thank you for helping me stay sober today.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you? Thank you, Lee. That's powerful stuff. Tinsley, would you give out the chips again?
My name is Tinsley. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for the great story. That was awesome. Here at this meeting, we have the chip system to mark our time away from our last drink. If you'd like to try this way of life one day at a time, we offer the white chip. Would anybody like to pick up a white chip?
On that broad highway.